Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we talk about strategies and ideas and blueprints for making that happen. I tell stories, I share some of those big, epic mistakes. And it's because I know ultimately that teachers are the greatest factor in terms of helping students reach their creative potential in school. Today we're going to be talking about project-based learning again. It's a topic we've been kind of talking about a lot over the last couple months, and I think it's partly because as we move back into our quote new normal, I think we have this opportunity to redefine it. And that redefinition of the new normal should include things like meaningful student-centered projects. It should include things like empowering students with voice and choice. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. And today I want to share some of the myths that teachers experience as they think about empowering their students with voice and choice in projects. So here are 7 myths that keep teachers from implementing project-based learning. Every year, I ask my pedagogy students about their most memorable learning experiences as a learner, whether it was in school or out in the, quote, real world. Nearly every example involves a creative project. These are the moments when the learning stuck, and often it was when they fell in love with the subject. But these were also the experiences that taught them things like collaboration and project management, flexible thinking, a growth mindset, and all of those critical soft skills. Many of my pedagogy students also describe courses where they never had the opportunity to create anything. And they describe some of the challenges of how the learning didn't stick, or they weren't able to go as deep in their learning. They didn't struggle as much. These classes were often fun and they were kind of tidy in their design, but they weren't connected to projects. And as we would begin talking about their experiences as learners and then some of the fears that they experience as pre-service teachers, I kind of noticed these myths emerge about project-based learning. And many of these are ones that I have experienced myself in my journey of engaging in project-based learning. I first, implemented PBL probably my beginning of my second year of teaching. And I had a long journey with lots of mistakes, and I bought into a lot of these myths. And so I just want to share some of these based on what I've heard other teachers share, based on what I've seen with my pre-service teachers, but also based on some of what I have believed myself. So here they are. Number one, creative projects don't require structure. Here's a danger in doing a total free-for-all in PBL. Early on in my PBL journey, I would give students loose guidelines and say, have at it, make it work. But they didn't make it work. They actually didn't do the work at all. Still, I felt like structure would squash their creative impulse and hamper their collaboration. Structure felt, well, artificial. Authentic projects didn't need that structure. But then I realized that I always use structure in my creative work. I've always had systems that facilitate my creativity. The truth is, structures are vital for authentic projects in real life. They provide the necessary creative constraint to push divergent thinking and help facilitate the actual work of creative work. And that's one of the things that I've noticed is that nearly every person I talk to who engages in meaningful projects in life, in their jobs, whether it's artists or engineers or entrepreneurs, they have structures. It might be something like radical candor structures from Kim Scott, and it's all about feedback structures. And I love that concept. It might be something around a project management structure that they use. It could be something around, using agile structures or design thinking. Whatever it may be, they use structures. Nearly every discipline uses a framework or a blueprint in their creative work, whether it's a writer's workshop structure and engineering process, the scientific method, or the design thinking framework. But these structures should inspire creativity and respect student agency. If you're interested in embedded structure within creativity, you might want to try design thinking. That's one of my favorites. You could also try something like inquiry-based learning, which is another structure that really works well. And I would describe both of these structures as things that fit really well with project-based learning. So I kind of view project-based learning as the pedagogical framework or structure, but design thinking or inquiry-based learning as sort of the thinking structure involved. All right, myth number two is the idea that creative projects work best with certain subjects. When I taught self-contained, where I taught all subjects, I was skeptical about doing PBL in math. Sure, it worked in history and social studies, but math? That was about drill and practice and analysis. But then I began to discover creativity within the discipline. Students worked collaboratively to create board games and an arcade game, which tied to probability and to statistics. They designed tiny houses using proportional reasoning and volume and surface area. One of my favorite methods of skill practice was the Scratch video game project, which reinforced the X and Y axis and helped students learn logic. But I also saw the creativity in the more traditional math lessons. Here, students began to engage in this creative process as they would solve problems and compare and contrast strategy. And looking back, I realized that part of the problem was my mindset. I wasn't viewing creativity as a mathematical concept. I had way too small of a definition of both a project and of creativity. Now, I love the definition of creativity as functional novelty. This encompasses so many aspects of life. And yet when you hear the word creative, you might be thinking of a painter or a playwright or an author or a photographer. In other words, you might be thinking of someone who makes things. You might think of creativity as art. However, we need a bigger definition of creativity. Yes, creativity involves making things, but it can also mean mashing up ideas in innovative ways. It can mean geeking out on data and finding unique solutions to practical problems. It can mean hacking systems and tweaking things in unusual ways. It can mean exploring ideas and navigating information until you become the expert curator. It can mean designing systems that empower the creative work of others. It can mean creating change in the world by speaking truth and leading movements and interacting with people. See, each one of these are examples of creativity. Now, the reality is, as we think about PBL, all of these things could be examples of project-based learning. It might be service-based, it might be a STEM project, it might be students creating a documentary or a blog. It may be designing a system. It might be robotics and 3D prototyping. PBL can happen in any subject. Myth number three. Creative projects work best with advanced students. This myth is often alluded to rather than spoken outright. A teacher might say he's not ready for this, or she should really focus on skill practice first. And another version of it is my kids aren't ready for creative projects. They're not far enough along in the content. Too often schools prevent special education students and ELL learners from accessing creative projects as well. And I recently did a podcast episode all about how to make it more accessible for ELL students and exceptional learners. But the idea is that we can provide accommodations and structures that allow exceptional learners and ELL students to thrive in PBL. When all students have access to creative projects, everyone benefits because there are more, there's more neurodiversity and linguistic diversity. However, this all means all approach, where we say every student deserves access to meaningful PBL, can be a challenge in collaborative projects. Too often in group projects, one member works independently while other members are dependent on that single member, merely filling in the gaps when asked to help. And this is why it's important that we build our creative projects to have structure and to have interdependency and to value that mutual neurodiversity. Again, I have a podcast in this series specifically about how to make the group process work. So I'm not going to take too much of a deep dive into this right now, but the goal is to design project-based learning in a way where students depend on each other, where they have ownership in the process, and where they are working interdependently with structure in mind. One of the examples is in brainstorming, right? You have each student brainstorm individually, then they share their ideas collectively, and you use a process to help them narrow down their ideas and select which idea they're going to do in their project. And so there's structure built into it, there's ownership because they own the process, and there's interdependency. They're depending on each other, but there's also that sense of individual ownership as well. Myth number four is that there's no time for it. When I first piloted creative projects, I started with culminating projects. I believe that creative projects should happen after students had mastered the basic skills. That was my mindset. And our projects always felt rushed. However, as I shifted toward a more PBL approach, and I really began to embrace this idea of project-based learning, I realized that it wasn't about adding something new to the plate. It was about reorganizing my plate. And it was this idea of teaching through the project rather than doing a culminating project. The traditional approach to teaching focuses on isolating specific skills and teaching them systematically to students. However, with PBL, we can have students learn the concept while also practicing a skill. So you're kind of doubling up. They can work on multiple interconnected standards at the same time instead of going sequentially through each standard. And when this happens, students move more slowly through the standards rather than going through a stop and go, you know, traditional method that we normally see. So that's the idea right here. It's the notion that we can spend more time on the project, layer these standards, chunk the standards, however you want to phrase it, and students will have more time to actually learn it at a deeper level. Now, I want to point out, you will still need to engage in direct instruction. You will still need to explicitly teach things. You will still need to do some concept attainment lessons. But the key thing is that you are doing those in small bursts rather than spending a long time on concept attainment or skill practice, and you're embedding these inside of the project itself. Myth number five, I'm not very creative. I've seen teachers who say, I would love to do creative projects, but I'm not really a creative teacher. But I think it's important that we recognize that every teacher is creative. It's just that we often have different approaches to creativity. I have an older blog post if you want to check it out, and it's all about the different types of creative thinking that you might have as a teacher. You could be the hacker using creativity through divergent thinking and breaking systems. You might be the engineer whose creativity comes through problem solving and fixing. You might be the architect where creativity is done through designing and building systems. The geek, creativity through experimentation and analysis. The astronaut whose creativity is done through curiosity and exploration. The artist whose creativity is done through original thinking and making, or the point guard whose creativity is done through strategic action and empathy. And so finding your creative approach really helps as you design PBL. You may be more of a curator who's gathering together different ideas, and that's totally fine. You're sort of like the astronaut in that moment, or the geek in that moment. You might be someone who can modify and hack existing curriculum. That's your style. You might be the engineer who will take curriculum or project someone else has developed, and in the moment you will problem solve the challenges and fix it and change it and make it better. But you might be the architect that designs the larger, you know, system for project-based learning. You might be the point guard who's leading a team engaging in PBL, and you might even have students do something like a student leadership team where students generate ideas and help plan the projects, and you are the point guard helping sort of run the offense of a PBL classroom. So finding your place and your style and your approach will help you thrive as a teacher engaging in PBL. The key thing is to recognize that we all have different creative approaches, and that doesn't mean if you're not a designer, that's okay. It doesn't mean you can't implement PBL. You just have to find your style that works for you and use that approach. Myth number six, creative projects have to be high tech. Creative projects don't necessarily require fancy equipment and high-tech gadgets. For example, yes, kids can prototype on a 3D printer, but they might use duct tape and cardboard. They might use Lego bricks and things like that. And all of those are good options as well. One of the ideas that I brought up in a book I wrote was this notion of vintage innovation. And it's the concept that innovation is often the overlap between the old and the new. It's the idea of bringing in the low tech and the high tech and mashing those up in creative ways. And so having less technology doesn't mean you can't engage in PBL. And then finally, number seven, myth number seven, you can't assess creativity. And this is the idea of, I want to do projects, but how will I assess it? And when I first began in my project-based learning journey, I graded student projects on creativity. It didn't work. And what I found is that instead of grading their creativity, what I needed to do was grade and assess as a thinking process. In other words, break down the creativity into specific ideas and have them self-assess. It was the idea of assessing the product as a formative process. It was the idea of having students engage in self-assessment and peer assessment, and that boosts the metacognition, and that allows them to learn more about what they know and what they don't know and what their next steps will do. So really, for me, myth number seven was getting over the idea that you have to assess in a traditional way and shifting towards having students own the assessment process in PBL and engaging in more self-assessment and peer assessment. So the bottom line is, these are just seven of the big myths that keep teachers away from engaging in PBL. And the truth is, they present big mental blocks that can be a challenge to get over. But when you recognize that these are just myths and that we can problem solve and that you can be the architect designing the learning for your students, ultimately we as teachers can design PBL experiences that will empower our students with voice and choice. And when that happens, they become the lifelong learners we know that they can become. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you find this podcast useful at all, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts, you know, Google Play, I'm not sure, whatever it may be. If you leave a review, that helps people find it. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a great day and go out and make something awesome.